Well, it certainly does not mean that everything is back to normal, but we are happy to tell you that we have some live baseball for you here tonight. A Blue Jays intra-squad game. You'll see one tonight. You'll see another one tomorrow. It's the Bo Bichettes against the Randall Grichiks.
Hey, what's going on? It's At the Letters for Thursday, July 16th. Arden Zwelling here. Ben Nicholson-Smith is not with us this week. He hopes to be back next week. But in his stead, I found the next best thing. The esteemed broadcaster of intra-squad games, Dan Schulman, is with me. Dan, how are you, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm a poor man's Ben Nicholson-Smith. Everything that Ben does, I do almost as well. So... But yes, I might be the only person you've ever had on the podcast who's called a combined no-hitter in an intra-squad game. So I've got that going for me.
Was that the fakest of fake baseball that you have ever broadcasted in your time?
Yeah, I don't see how it couldn't be. Yeah, I don't see how it couldn't be. I mean, I will tell you this, and you love baseball as much as I love baseball. I've really enjoyed being back in the ballpark, and it was fun to do. And there, you know, there were a dozen things that were really weird about it and things we're all going to have to get used to if there is going to be a baseball season this year, because it'll be a weird season. But the nice thing about baseball, I guess, is even in an intra-squad game, like it's not like Matt Shoemaker's throwing 72 instead of 92 because right. It's his teammates. They're still throwing the ball as hard. They're still swinging the bats as hard. I mean, maybe they're, you know, we didn't see any takeout slides or anything on the base paths, obviously, but other than that, it felt like as real of a version of baseball as we could possibly get in an intra-squad game.
And they did doll it up a bit for the broadcast with actual lineups and team names. Watching some of those early intra-squad games and seeing Matt Bush been running around in center field, I was thinking, oh, geez, Dan and Joe are going to have to try to navigate this thing. You know, here's Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hitting third in the order, and he's coming back up at eighth in the order. So they've made it something more like an MLB experience.
They did. So we knew, I don't know, a week, 8-9 days ago that we were going to do these games. And that was before that first plane had come in with Biggio, McKinney, Alford, Fisher, one other outfielder. I can't remember. That's when Bushman was playing the outfield. And guys like Riley Adams and Andy Burns were playing the outfield. When I got to the ballpark, whatever it was, 5-6 days ago, and saw a lot of familiar faces and outfielders' gloves, and they were taking BP, that made me feel a lot better. And then, of course, when Gurriel landed a couple of days ago, that was good. So, but yeah, you're right. On Monday, before we did it, the day before we did it, I think they started experimenting a little bit more with the scoreboard, with the crowd noise. Tim Langton, the PA announcer, was there, walk-up music. And it's the kind of thing, you know, I got asked about it before. How do you think it'll sound? Should they do this kind of thing or not? And I didn't really know how to feel, but my instinct was, no, it'll sound silly. But now having been in the ballpark for it, I actually think it helped a little bit. I mean, you can't go, you know, crazy overboard with that kind of stuff. But just to have a little bit of typical baseball ambiance in the ballpark, I think helped a little bit.
It's funny how you get used to it, right? Because I didn't actually register the pumped in crowd noise until they turned it off at the end of the game. And it was like, oh, something just left us, right? There's no more this, there's no more murmur and kind of low hum. I kind of want to watch one of these games without any of those bells and whistles, right? No pumped in crowd noise, no stadium workers with signs in the stands, no PA announcer. I just want to hear the sounds of the game and let it speak for itself, right? I want to hear the chatter between the dugouts and the pitcher swearing at himself on the mound because he didn't execute a pitch. When Billy McKinney makes that great running grab and right last night, I want to hear the woos and the let's goes. I want to hear the dugout getting behind him. I think it's such a cool and like rare look into what the game's like at field level. So I almost wish they wouldn't bring any of these bells and whistles into the regular season.
Yeah, I feel that way to a certain extent too, but I think Major League Baseball does not want you to be able to hear the pitcher swear at himself and if there's yelling between the dugouts or something like that. So I think part of this is to make it feel a little bit more normal for fans. And I think part of it, honestly, is to make sure that nothing gets out over the air that they don't want to get out over the air. And I may be wrong here, but I think this is an MLB-wide thing. that there will be some sort of, you know, murmuring crowd noise at every ballpark. I don't think it's a team by team decision. I don't want to bet my life on that, but I think this is MLB wide. I was watching a little bit of a Rays. Here's a sentence I've never said before. I was watching a little bit of a Rays intra-squad game earlier today, and they have it as well. And you know who's got the toughest job in the ballpark now is the guy or the woman, whoever it is, who's running the crowd noise, because you want to turn it up, turn it down. And I don't know if you're just pushing different buttons, like, you know, is there a disappointment crowd noise button? Is there a groan button? Is there a yay button? Or is it just a volume dial that's going up and down? But you can feel in various ballparks that they're experimenting and trying to decide, you know, how much is, you don't want to be cartoonish about it, right? Obviously, if anything, you err on being understated. When we have our headsets on up in the broadcast booth, and we're, you know, I know where you were and you know where I was yesterday for that intra-squad game, we're much higher than you and we have our headsets on. So to be honest with you, you probably hear it a lot more on your level than we did where we are in the broadcast booth. We knew it was there, but I don't think I spent more than 2 seconds thinking about it actually during the game.
What stood out to me was the additional crowd noise that will get pumped in for certain individuals' plate appearances. So I found that Bo Bichette got the biggest crowd noise, it seemed like. I didn't keep a running tally of it, but it seemed like he got a lot more crowd noise, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. got a lot more crowd noise pumped through than, say, Santiago Espinal when he was coming up. I found that kind of interesting, because that would be, you know, those are some other decisions that I guess is going to have to be made. If Bo Bichette comes up in the bottom of the seventh with two runners in scoring position and two out and a one-run deficit, you would think there would be more crowd noise at that point than in his first inning at bat. So is that something that individual then has to manage?
I would guess so. From the way you describe it, it wasn't a coincidence. So I would guess that's the case. But what if you're like Randall Grichuk, and if Bo gets more than you do, and I'm just using Grichuk as an example, does Grichuk get angry if he doesn't get as much as Bo's getting? And then does he go to somebody in the media relations department who then goes to somebody in the game ops department, and do they have all that kind of stuff going on? And what about visitors players? If the Blue Jays do play at home and the Yankees come in, does Aaron Judge get louder noise? And what kind of noise when he's brought up? So listen, it's one of the million things that, you know, none of us ever thought we'd have to contemplate in our lives. None of us ever even could have imagined having these conversations. But if they are going to get this thing off the ground, and if it is going to get through to the finish line, as I'm sure you've said many times, it's a pandemic, right? Everything is on the table right now. Everything's under consideration.
Yeah, agents across the game are currently working out how to get the crowd noise provision put into these player contracts. But you're right, it is still a pandemic, and it is funny. I was kind of talking to our producer Christian about this before we started recording, and I actually had this conversation with Arash last night at the ballpark. Arash asked me, he said, hey, like, does any of this feel normal yet? Isn't this all pretty weird? And I kind of had to take a second and be like, wow, I did just kind of fall back into the normal machinations of baseball, of here's batting practice happening and who's in the lineup tonight and who's injured and who's pitching tomorrow, and kind of forgot that I am going through multiple symptoms questionnaires before I ever enter the ballpark, and temperature checks, and we're all wearing masks and spaced out, and there are guys on the field with these big green machines that they're disinfecting the baseballs with. It's weird and it's not normal, but it is kind of funny, Dan, how you just kind of, you know, doing what we do, you fall back into that normal routine of the day-to-day baseball life.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, you've been down there, I think as much, I've probably been down 6 times, I guess, in the last 8 days or something like that. So, you know, kind of by day 3, the weird is normal to a certain extent. Like, you know, the questionnaire, you know, the temperature check, you know, how the stairwell that we're using to get up to the 200 level and how distanced everybody is. And it just becomes kind of second nature. The different one for me the last couple of days was the actual routine of filling out my game scorecard, like the preparation that I do before calling a game live on television. And I won't claim to have gone into as much detail or depth on my scorecard for the intra-squad games as I do for a regular season game, obviously, but just the routine of lineup, pitchers, defense, some stats, some notes, that sort of thing. It was very comforting, to be honest with you. Like I really hope that playing baseball can happen and without increasing the risk for those involved too significantly. That goes without saying. but we're all creatures of habit. We all love baseball. I don't know about you. I'm not particularly well equipped to do anything else in life. This is what I do. So, you know, it was very comforting for me to be sitting in a chair in a broadcast booth and writing out a lineup. And I enjoyed that part of it. Now, the interesting thing about last night, though, is, you know, the weirdness of the intra-squad game and the no fans and all that, the whole thing had a very exhibition-y feeling to it. What I don't know how I'll feel is when we get to a regular season game and there's still no sound in the ballpark other than a little murmuring and no fans in the stands. Like, I didn't call last night like it's a regular season game. I didn't go crazy on home runs or, you know, when a team made a comeback, whatever. But for a regular season game, like, it matters. The standings count and the stats count. And now my adrenaline should be more at a regular season level with 40,000 people in the stands. But there's still going to be nobody in the ballpark. So last night, to me, was kind of easy. It was easy for, you know, my level to meet the ambiance in the ballpark. But in a regular season game, there's still not going to be any atmosphere. Can I take my level up a notch to where it needs to be for the fans sitting at home who are watching this game because it matters?
Are you concerned at all about maybe coming in a little too hot and going a little too high to compensate?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been doing it a long time in baseball and in basketball. And when a big moment happens for the home team, you're used to having to try to compete with the crowd a little bit. I wouldn't even say compete with the crowd. I think the crowd pushes you up to another level. If there's a huge moment in a visiting ballpark for the visiting team, whether it's visitors versus Blue Jays or, you know, if I'm doing an ESPN game, doesn't matter. There's not as much noise in the ballpark, so maybe your call doesn't rise up as much. But I don't have any feel for doing a game in front of nobody. Like, I've never done this before other than the intra-squad game. So, yes, I can tell you unequivocally, I will be recording the early games of the season and listening back to key moments when I get home at 11 o'clock at night, because as all broadcasters know, how it sounds when you say it is not always how it sounds when you listen back to it. And you're right. I could be too hot. I could be too low. There's really, really no way to know. And there's no playbook for this. And I'll be interested. I'll talk to friends of mine who are play-by-play guys for other teams or other networks. And I'm sure we'll share experiences, and we're going to make mistakes, or we're going to have moments we wish we could have back, but we're all kind of, you know, feeling our way through this. And I'd rather feel a little strange and call baseball than not call baseball at all.
Is your understanding that if the Blue Jays play at Rogers Center, you will be in the building for all of the home games?
Yes, similar to the two intra-squad games. So I don't know that that is etched in stone, but my understanding is if the home games are in at Rogers Center, we'll be there. For road games, we would be at what you and I refer to as OMP, but for the people out there, the Sportsnet Studios, the Rogers Sportsnet Studios. You know, calling a game at an empty ballpark is one thing. That's still preferable to calling a game in a studio for obvious reasons that we can get into. So, I mean, for many reasons, most of which have very little to do with me, I do want the Blue Jays to play in Toronto. I do believe this can be done relatively safely. I do believe the players will do what they have to do. I think the Blue Jays will accept staying in the bubble on their home stands if that's what it takes to get this done. And I think they'd be at a big competitive disadvantage if they played in the U.S. I'm Canadian. I'm very proud of how our country is now managing this situation. And obviously we all have some, you know, level of discomfort with the risk increasing too much. But I think the team has impressed upon the players what they need to do in order to make this happen. And I'd like to do, selfishly, I'd like to do 30 games at a ballpark with the possibility of a roof open and be able to see if the infield is in or if somebody's up in the bullpen or if a pinch hitter's in the on-deck circle. You know, all the things you take for granted when you're actually in the ballpark calling a game.
Well, and talk about an adjustment. If you are calling away games off of a monitor, do you have an idea of how you'll get that information? Or are you just going to have to tap dance until it pops up on the screen for you?
So here's what I know, and as you can imagine, a lot of this is still being discussed and planned and coordinated because this is all new for everybody. So let's say the Blue Jays are at Fenway Park. So Nesson, the Red Sox broadcaster, they are doing the feed of the game. There will be no Blue Jay announcers there. There will be no Blue Jay crew there, with one exception that I'll get to in a second. So Nesson will have their feed, and they will also produce what's called a clean feed, where there's a feed coming out from their truck that Sportsnet will pick up. that has no graphics and no announcers' voices and that sort of thing. Home broadcasters are being told, when you do a game, you can't shoot like your guys 90% of the time and the other team's guys 10% of the times. You've got to do a 50-50 broadcast. It's similar, Arden, to what broadcasters do at world events like the World Cup or the Olympics. Not every country sends camera people and announcers to cover rowing or gymnastics or whatever.
Right.
You get a clean feed, and a lot of those announcers are calling them from back in their own countries. And that's why if you watch some Olympic events, it looks like a very neutral feed. They're showing athletes from every different country, not just the country that you're from, because it's not your country's cameras that are shooting the event. So you'll get a clean feed out of there. We'll insert our graphics and our announcers. But I also believe there are plans in place so that each visiting team would be allotted one camera for themselves. So say there are six cameras in the ballpark, five would be for the Red Sox, and then one of them, who would be a Boston person, would be kind of given to Sportsnet and would have a way of communicating with our director at the Sportsnet studio so that if the Boston announcers do get into a bit of a story about Rafael Devers and it's going on a little bit, that we would have the ability to say to the one cameraman designated for our purposes to say, hey, can you give me Barucki on the mound again? Or just to shoot something other than that. It will look weird if I'm talking about Ryan Barucki for 30 seconds and you're seeing Rafael Devers for 30 seconds on your screen. Yeah. But I just want to caution all viewers out there, it's going to happen. This is a very complicated situation. It's not going to look exactly like a typical Sportsnet broadcast, nor will for Red Sox fans when they come to Toronto, it's not going to look like a typical NESN broadcast for them. So that's what I think we'll have, one camera for us. And there's also talk possibly about like a high home camera that just shoots the field so that we can see, is the infield in, is the shift on, that sort of thing. So sorry to ramble here. So when we're sitting in a studio, what I think they're going to do is find the biggest television monitor they can find, put it right in front of us, and that'll be the game feed. And then we may have other little monitors on the side, which could be that high home feed or our camera, so that I can see other little things that might help me that I might not be able to see on the game feed. So I hope that all makes sense, but it's going to be different. I've done very little of this. Most of us have done some, but not a lot of this, calling things from studio, and there will be a learning curve for us, obviously, as well.
Well, and that information is so crucial. I don't know if people are aware of this, but when you are in the booth at Rogers Center, I mean, you have the ability to look into the bullpen. You have a camera you can flip on that'll show you what's happening on the home side and the visiting side in the bullpen, and then obviously you just look up and can see where players are shifted or if the outfielders are playing at the wall or if they're in and things like that. So I was kind of curious what if the setup would look like it does sort of in the truck, where there are, you know, a dozen different screens showing all kinds of different information. But it sounds like you will have to get through a bit of an adjustment period without some of that information, or just learning how to access that information differently. And I would imagine there really isn't a way you could even practice this until you were just live on the air.
Correct. I know I'm going in the day before the regular season starts just to, quote, get comfortable, but we won't be calling a game. But I think we'll just see what the setup is and maybe have some input into tweaking the setup to make it a little more manageable. But you're right. Until they say play ball the next day, we won't know exactly what we're dealing with. I mean, listen, we're not flying a spaceship to the moon. We'll figure it out. It's a baseball game. The other thing that you take for granted too is when you do a game, even when we would do a game on the road in a typical year, some of the camera people are Sportsnet people. We travel some camera people with us, and then we hire some local camera people as well. So say three travel, those three know the Blue Jays inside out, right? They know what John Schneider looks like. They know what Guillermo Martinez looks like. You know, they have a feel for the team, and that always helps. The more people who are on the broadcast who have a feel for your team, the better the broadcast is going to be. It's not just the announcers that make a show. It's the producer and the director and statistician and the camera people and the tape people and all that sort of stuff. But listen, these are really, really talented people, and I'm sure there is an intense amount of collaboration going on right now between the 30 broadcasters, the 30 local carriers. And the easier Nesson makes it on Sportsnet when the Blue Jays are there, the easier Sportsnet makes it on Nesson when the Red Sox are in Toronto, right? It's all about collaboration, and everybody just wants to do the best job they can.
And that support crew would also just have an idea of, so-and-so is wearing it on the mound right now. Let's take a look at Pete Walker. Let's get a shot of him, or let's get a shot of, you know, Guillermo while Bo Bichette is locked into an 11-pitch battle at the plate. And those are little fine details. You have to be close to the team to know and to be aware of and to look out for. It's interesting. Like, conversations like these, it's as close as I've been to, like, confident that this season is going to happen, that we're actually going to see these games on television at some point. As we sit here right now, we're about a week away from games that matter. But I have certainly had my doubts throughout this entire process of whether this thing was going to get off the ground or not, particularly when camps opened and we saw that the testing wasn't quite being turned around fast enough. Players were speaking out, GMs were speaking out, training sessions were being delayed. We haven't seen anything like that for a few days now, which is helping increase the optimism on my side. It sounds like you are feeling rather optimistic that this thing is going to not only go off, well, I won't say without a hitch, but, you know, is not only going to be played, yeah, but that it is going to be done in a way that is safe, not only for the players, but for all of the individuals that we have been talking about who are going to the ballpark to help create these broadcasts.
Yeah, I hope so. And part of that, I think, Arden, is, like, if I'm going to do this to the best of my ability, I can't sit on the, you know, kind of sit on the back burners and say, well, I'm not sure if they're going to do this. And, like, I've got to start revving up now. You know, there are games coming. And as you know, our ability to get information is a little bit different right now, too. So you're trying to get information wherever you can. But I agree with you back that, you know, right after that 4th of July weekend when we had all the issues with three or four different teams, to me, that was a very precarious moment for baseball. Not hanging by its fingernails on the edge of a cliff, but not far from that. And they couldn't have that again. They could not have a recurrence of that. And it sounds like, for the most part, things have gone better since. And we haven't had a widespread outbreak within a team, like 15 guys checking out now. Because if 15 guys are checking out now, they're not ready to start the season. So it feels like once most teams got through the intake process that there have been very few positive tests. And ultimately, that's what needs to happen. But I don't know about you. I wake up every morning and you kind of go on Twitter like you're squinting a little bit because you're kind of afraid to see some big story that just says, boom, it's not going to happen. But things have been going pretty well, and relatively speaking, I think. And I am optimistic they're going to get this thing off the ground, you know, but none of the 30 teams are traveling right now, right? None of them are getting on airplanes. Well, we've had smaller charter airplanes, but none of them are flying from city to city. And that's obviously going to start as soon as the season begins. And that increases things. But I'm glad you made the point about, we talk about the players all the time. And of course, they're the product. So that's what we talk about. But there are security people and grounds people and people making food for the players and the clubhouse attendants and the media. And, you know, there are other people there. I wouldn't even know where to guess how many people were in the ballpark yesterday. 60 players. I don't think there were more than 200 people in the ballpark, and nobody was near anybody. But, you know, everybody's well-being is equally important. Maybe not to get a baseball game off the ground, but everybody's well-being is equally important. And I feel safe when I go into Rogers Center with the protocols. I mean, you and I we're not getting nasal swabs. Because for people who don't know, there are tier one people, tier two, and tier three. Tier one are the players and anybody who has to come into contact with the players. We're tier three. We don't get near the players. So we answer questionnaires, get our temperature checked, have to wear masks at all time, and sit within an extensive amount of social distancing. I think that everybody down at the Rogers Center, and I assume it's the same at the other ballparks, I think they're doing a good job. I don't feel unsafe when I go to the ballpark.
I don't feel unsafe either. And I think a lot of that is because of the protocols that we're following. And I don't, you know, I have very seldom come within 6 feet of somebody while I've been at the ballpark. And that's been just passing by in a hallway or something like that. But I also am, like, wary of letting my guard down. Having a reduction in caution here, because I do look out at the field during some of these games and I see some protocols that are not being perfectly followed. Like I see players sitting pretty close to one another in dugouts. I see a lot of spitting, balls being thrown around the horn after strikeouts, which I believe is discouraged right now. You know, I've seen players kind of, you know, high-fiving and patting each other on the head and physical contact, all those things. You know, these are recommendations and these are guidelines. I don't think that MLB has said we outlaw these actions and we're going to punish you for them. But when you see things like that, like it really does bring back home for me just how high the vigilance needs to be throughout this season and how we cannot relax any of these guidelines and any of these protocols. Like we talked about the testing around the July 4th weekend, when players are saying they haven't been tested in 7 days, that's unacceptable. And when players aren't getting their test results back quickly, that is also unacceptable. And Mike Rizzo, I think, made some really prudent comments about that by saying, look, we're not going to play this season. I'm not going to put my players and staff and everybody at risk if MLB isn't going to take this more seriously. So like, I guess I'm of two minds of it is what I'm saying here, Dan, is that yes, I feel safe. And I think that this thing will be played and everybody can be healthy, but we also need to keep the vigilance sky high throughout this.
Absolutely. I mean, all you have to do is, you know, look at the surging of the cases in various places in the U.S. And if you're not treating it with vigilance, like, what are you watching? You know, and I don't want to politicize your podcast here, but like, you know, what are you watching? And right. What comforts me a little, and maybe it shouldn't, but we've seen baseball people speak out, like Mike Rizzo. Like, if anything's not right, they're speaking out. People are not biting their tongues. And we haven't heard a lot of that in the last 7 to 10 days. So that makes me hope, at least, that things are going better. But you're right. If it says they have to be tested every second day, and I can't remember if that's what it is or not, then they've got to be tested every second day. The high-fiving one is interesting. I did notice some of that the last couple of days while we were doing the games, and some of it inevitably was on camera, right? You saw it on TV because a guy hits a homer and he high fives the on deck hitter when he gets back to the plate. It's going to show on TV. And obviously that's something you want to avoid. And I don't even know if they're thinking about it or if it's just muscle memory and 20 years of playing baseball that makes them do it. I think, you know, it's interesting you talk about vigilance. I think at some point the teams might feel secure in their bubble. Hey, we're all getting tested and maybe we can, you know, push the lines a little bit here in the sanctity of our own ballpark. But if 2 days earlier on a road trip, somebody went out and got a beer and sat on a patio, which is allowed where they are, you know, there's risk there. And they may be asymptomatic because they're young and healthy and bring it back into the clubhouse. And by the time you know, it's too late. And that's, you know, the sinister aspect of this, one of the sinister aspects of this virus is that you may not know you have it and you may not know you've transmitted it. And I agree with you. We have to be as vigilant as we can be, and it's going to go much longer than a 60-game, 66 baseball season. This is, if we're not talking about coronavirus on opening day next year, if there is an opening day next year, I would be amazed. This is not going away quickly. And you know, God willing, at some point there's a vaccine or a treatment or a combination of the two that can allow us to go back to, you know, some kind of life like we had before. But this is going to be with us for a while.
And that was the hilarious thing about the 2021 schedule being released a few days ago. And it was 2021. Yeah. Let's figure out 2020 here before we think about opening day 2021. And you know, for us, Dan, looking at it through a Blue Jays lens, I think it's actually even more difficult for us to talk about some of these issues and to consider this bubble, because what the Blue Jays are doing is so different from what other teams are doing. And obviously, we don't know where the team's home games are going to be played yet as we record this. The information is constantly changing, so maybe we'll be outdated by the time this even comes out. But there's also the lack of transparency that we've seen from the Blue Jays when it comes to positive tests, numbers of positive tests, individuals who have tested positive. We have seen other clubs say we had X players test positive and X staff test positive at intake. We've had some clubs that have actually encouraged their players to give them consent in order to publicize the fact that they tested positive. That's how we know Freddie Freeman had the virus and Will Smith. You know, that's how we know about some of these individuals. But with the Blue Jays, for us, it has been this sort of strange guessing game where we're looking out at the field and saying, okay, so that guy's here, check him off the list. And there's this guy. Where's that guy? Has anyone seen him? Maybe he's not out there for a different reason. We just don't know. And the information is so scarce. It's sort of like it makes it hard for us to address topics like whether or not Brandon Drury will be available for opening day, because I have not seen him in Toronto yet, or whether or not Wilmer Font will be in the Blue Jays bullpen. It's like it's a very thorny situation for us, Dan, as we try to comment on this team.
What Arden is saying, it absolutely happened about 4 or 5 days ago. I think you, Ben, and Shai were all at the ballpark on that day, and I was at the ballpark, and we were sitting in our makeshift press box area, and I wandered over, not within 6 feet, but I wandered over to you guys and said, okay, here's a list of guys I haven't seen, and Ben was putting together a document, and you were looking for guys, and we were literally collaborating. And Shai had a camera out, like trying to get a zoom, you know, get a better look at it. Is that who I think it is? Because there's no other way for us to find out. And it is strange. And I understand the privacy laws when it's a, you know, a non-sports related injury, and nobody's trying to infringe on that. But, you know, what you said about Drury and Font is interesting, because I had to handle that on the air the last couple of nights. So like Santiago Espinal would come up, and let's be honest, most people watching the game probably don't know that much about Santiago Espinal. So I give him the background, Steve Pierce trade, this, that. And then I said, he's opened up some eyes and he's playing well. And I've been here for a few days and he does something good every day. And I said, I think he's got a chance to make this ball club at the outset, especially if Brandon Drury is not here. Brandon Drury, right-handed batter, can play a lot of different positions. Espinal, similar in some regards. And then all I can say is, Brandon Drury was one of four Blue Jays last week who was placed on the injured list without a reason being given. And then I say something like, which of course in these times gives rise to speculation that it may be COVID related. And that's all I can say, right? Because I can't say he has COVID because I don't know. But when a player is placed on the IL without a reason being given, and you mentioned Wilmer Font, that just happened 2-3 days ago, it does give rise to speculation. And listen, it's your job and my job to say, okay, if Wilmer Font's not on the team, who might get a spot in the bullpen that otherwise wouldn't have, right? From the teams that I've seen, it seems about 50-50 between whether they're being open about it or whether they're not. It makes our jobs easier if they're open about it. And the one part I don't understand is there's no stigma to getting COVID. You know, I mean, millions of people have gotten it, most of them unknowingly, and most of them not their fault. And we all know somebody in our life probably who has it or has had it. So I wish it would be handled differently, but you know, we're not privy to the conversations and the lawyers and the meetings and whatever else has gone on. But it will make for some awkward moments for me when I say something like, well, Wilmer Font is not here to the best of my knowledge. And that's all that I can say about it.
And we have these charters of players arriving throughout the week as well, right? So Lourdes Gurriel Jr. very obviously was not in Toronto when intra-squad games began early this week or last week, whatever that was. And then suddenly he was. And suddenly he was in left field. And just because an individual was delayed in getting to Toronto, or just because an individual still isn't in Toronto, does not necessarily mean they have the virus. As you said, you can be added to that COVID-19 injured list if you have come in contact with somebody who had the virus. If you have symptoms, you can have all kinds of issues with testing and reasons that you are, you know, not allowed to cross the border just yet. So just because an individual isn't here and we don't see them does not mean that they have the virus, but the club is not commenting either way. So we have to sort of dance around, well, why hasn't Alek Manoah been in a game yet? Or Patrick Murphy. And, you know, I spoke to Alex Anthopoulos about this last week. And because the Braves have been publicizing, they're, you know, Freddie Freeman, Will Smith have come forward and talked about having the virus. We obviously heard that Nick Markakis actually opted out of the season after talking to Freddie Freeman and hearing about his experience with it. And Alex told me that when a player would test positive, he and Brian Snitker, Atlanta's manager, would call the player and talk to them about it. And within that conversation, they would actually encourage the player to give the team consent to make the result public, not only because of this awkward dance that we're talking about and, you know, media asking about the player and the club having to offer no comments and the speculation that comes along with that, but also it can be a bit of a public service. Like it can bring awareness to the dangers of the virus. And also the dangers players are facing by trying to put this game on our televisions every night for our entertainment during a pandemic. But more so when a fan sees that Freddie Freeman or Will Smith is having trouble with this thing, like I think it can really resonate with them and help them take the virus more seriously, especially within a country like the United States, where we have seen there are not enough people who are taking this virus seriously.
Yeah, no, I think you make a great point. I think it can be a great lesson to all of us to learn, you know, when somebody young and healthy like Freddie Freeman, who says, you know, we had our groceries brought in, like I didn't even go to a grocery store. We didn't see any of our friends and I still got it and I don't know how and I'm sick and I've got symptoms. I think that was a really significant moment around baseball and hopefully it made a lot of other people take this more seriously. But you're right, it is complicated because somebody like Brandon Drury is on the injured list, and we haven't seen him in Toronto. Alek Manoah and Patrick Murphy are not on the injured list, but we don't think they're in Toronto. We haven't seen them. We believe that two guys who were put on the injured list, reasons unspecified at the beginning, Jonathan Davis and Hector Perez, if I'm not mistaken, they came up on the plane with Gurriel, and they're in Toronto now, but they're still on the injured list, so they're not playing in games yet. So there, you know, there are shades of gray here, right? All kinds of different situations going on. And we're not trying to, you know, say anything that we shouldn't say, but it, as you said, it feels fairly obvious who is on the injured list because of COVID. Because I assume, like, let's say Chase Anderson's oblique doesn't get better and they put him on the injured list at the beginning of the season. I assume they're going to say he's on the injured list because of a strained oblique. Or if somebody pulls a hamstring, they're going to say, I hope they say this, a pulled hamstring. So we're going to have baseball injuries and then just no reason given. And again, it's fairly obvious what's going on. But like, I can't go on the air and say such and such a player has COVID. I can't do that unless that player has agreed for that information to become public. And as of this time, as you said, that hasn't happened with the Blue Jays. So, you know, when you had waves of players coming up on different charter flights, it makes you think some of those players were exposed to the person who had COVID, and then they had to go through the 72-hour, two negative tests, that sort of thing, before they could be cleared to rejoin the group. But the funny thing is, like, I think the way we found out Gurriel was coming to Toronto was he posted a picture on his Instagram page.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. And he was sitting with somebody. I can't remember who was sitting beside him.
It was Hector Perez,
so then we knew that
player. I'm pretty sure.
Hector Perez, right, was sitting beside him. And then somebody noticed, kind of blurry in the background, it looked like 10 feet further behind, oh, that looks like Austin Martin. And Austin Martin saw the tweet and like put like a wink or a smiley face emoji. Oh, I guess Austin Martin's coming to Toronto. And Martin was in a different situation, right? He had just signed, so he couldn't come until he had signed. But, you know, we're all becoming like internet detectives right now because information is hard to come by, not just with the Blue Jays, with a lot of these teams. But again, it's a pandemic and there are certain things that have always been a certain way that are not going to be a certain way this year. And I think we as the media have to understand there will be a lot of changes. And I think the ball clubs have to understand that the media still has an obligation and a right for certain kinds of information. And on another note, just not to change topics here, but I don't know how you feel. Like in the Zoom world, which is what it is right now, I think the Blue Jays media relations department is kicking butt right now. I mean, they're getting us as much as they can get us. And I find them very helpful. And you get to see what everybody's, you know, mask style is, how everybody looks. But, you know, even if you miss them, we can go somewhere later. We can get the Jordan Romano Zoom or the Charlie Montoyo Zoom and get the information we need. And they are working really, really hard under difficult situations to try to keep us as informed as they can on the baseball stuff. So I do think we've got to, you know, give them a tip of the cap for that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolute kudos to the Blue Jays PR department. They've done like a great job under some very difficult circumstances because, yeah, they are, you know, it's a delicate dance as well with MLB protocols, what you're allowed to do, what is, you know, what the media demands and what we have an obligation to have. And then also the players' time because a scrum now takes like 15 minutes where once it took like 5 to 7. This is, you know, Pete Walker was up there for like half an hour the other day, Dan.
You know, Pete is the Zoom MVP so far of summer camp. Pete was given out unbelievable information. And listen, there are 33 pitchers in camp or whatever it is. And we're all trying to get. And Pete was great. I was surprised at the end he didn't say, got anything else for? And he's the hardest working guy on the ball club. You know that. I mean, 30 pitchers, he's probably up at the crack of dawn and at the ballpark for 14, 15 hours a day. But listen, we get what we can get and we try to piece together what we can piece together. And if there's information that we just can't get, I don't know how you feel, but on a broadcast of a game, I'm likely to say, and it won't be with any kind of a, you know, a tone or anything to it, but I might say, you know, we're not able to get that information, or we're trying to piece this together as best we can, because ultimately, you know, we serve the fans, right? We serve the viewers and the readers, and our job is to inform and entertain them as much as we can, and we'll do the best in the situation we've got.
Oh yeah, I promise you, Pete Walker has better things to do than spend 30 minutes on Zoom with us. Like you said, 33 pitchers, very long days for the other, keeping the coffee machine busy for the coaches. Let me put this one to you here as we start to wrap up. It strikes me the weird zero-sum nature of intra-squad games. How do you weigh results in these games? So say Alejandro Kirk goes deep to center off Tanner Roark. Does that mean Tanner Roark right now is unable to get a minor leaguer out? Or does that mean Alejandro Kirk's ready to hit big league pitching?
It's a great question. And here's the way I look at it, because you're right. I think you tend to accentuate the positive more than give credence to the negative. And I also think you tend to accentuate the positive in a minor leaguer, whereas for a major leaguer, if he struggles, you say, well, he's just working on stuff, or, you know, it's not indicative of what'll happen once they turn the lights on and that sort of thing. It's a really good question. I'm hoping to see more of Alejandro Kirk over the next few days. I was hoping we'd see him on TV over the last couple of nights. But I think, you know, the guys we tend to focus on, like Jordan Romano, we're focusing on him. You know, Matt Shoemaker, since they've come to Toronto, that I've seen, has had two starts. The first one was unbelievable. 6 innings, 60 pitches. He was great. The second start, he had trouble with his release point, his fastball location. He gave up a couple of homers. I'm not worried about Matt Shoemaker because of the second one, because Matt Shoemaker is Matt Shoemaker. We know what Matt Shoemaker is. So I think we tend to maybe focus on it more in the younger players and the guys who are fighting for jobs. Like, again, Jordan Romano made a statement. You know, Anthony Alford's a guy you watch closely in games like this, right? He's a guy who can make a statement, positive or negative. Derek Fisher, positive or negative. Those kinds of guys, I worry more about the results than the veteran guys.
And preconceived notions and expectations come into play there a little bit too, right? Because of, you know, Hyunjin Ryu could have gone out there and said, you know what, I just really want to work on my cutter today. I haven't thrown a lot in camp. 50 of the 90 pitches I throw are going to be cutters. And say he mislocates a bunch and they leave the yard. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to get rocked in big league games. I mean, it still is quote unquote spring training and pitchers are still working on things. You look at a guy like Alejandro Kirk, who you would expect to be somewhat overmatched against big league pitching. He's never played above high A, or maybe he's touched double A, but I'm pretty sure he hasn't been above Dunedin. And he goes out there and takes a legitimate big league starter deep to center. And you say, wow, you know, maybe this kid is ahead of the curve. So it also does test what we expect and what our notions are of players coming into camp, Dan.
I think so. As you said, a guy like Hyunjin Ryu has earned the right to work on stuff. He's not fighting for anything. He's just trying to get himself ready for opening day. The younger players are trying to make a team, and they don't have 2 weeks of early spring training and then 5 weeks of games to do it. But everything is condensed, right? This is 16 days instead of 50 days of camp. So I think if you're a younger guy, and Kirk knows he's not going to break camp with the team, but you're still trying to make an impression. Hyunjin Ryu did not walk out to the mound saying, I want to make an impression today. The younger guys are trying to make an impression and may feel pressure to make an impression, because normally if you don't make the club, you go play AAA. There is no AAA. You're going to go play intra-squad games in Buffalo or somewhere, wherever it is, for possibly 9 or 10 weeks. I would think there's a lot on the line for these guys to try to be player number 30 and not player number 31. It's a big, big difference this year. So I think the results do matter for the, you know, back end of the roster trying to make the team guys. But for the veterans, I think you just kind of wash it away and wait for the season to start.
Last one for you. Can you pick a sleeper of this camp, an under-the-radar guy that we are not talking about enough, who you think has a very real chance to impact the big league club this year?
Well, I mentioned Espinal before. I do like him, and I do think he's got a chance to be on the club because we don't know where Drury is. And I think there are some sneaky at-bats for right-handed batters available. Like if Shaw plays third, but will he play against all lefties? Will Rowdy Tellez, who I think is going to play a lot, but will he play against lefties? I think there are some sneaky at-bats for a guy like Santiago Espinal, a right-handed batter who can play a lot of positions and who I know Charlie Montoyo likes. I know Charlie loves Joe Panik, and Joe Panik will be on the team. Whenever anybody in a Blue Jay uniform compares anybody to Eric Sogard, you know they like them. And Panik has been compared to Eric Sogard. So I would say those two. On the pitching side, it depends how deep you want to go. If you want me to go deep, deep sleeper, you know, with Anderson being out and Merriweather being out right now and maybe both unlikely to start the season, I think a couple of guys are going to sneak in there. I'm curious about Ty Tice. I really am. If he could grab that 16th pitcher, that last spot, I think about 13 of them are easy. We know who they're going to be. But I'm going to go deep down into the sleeper well and say Ty Tice really intrigues me.
You took the words out of my mouth. That was my guy. After watching him a couple times, I think we are all overlooking Ty Tice right now. And you have to think that the Blue Jays are going to churn through pitchers this year, as all clubs are, not only because they have expanded rosters and because certain pitchers are less stretched out than others, but we're just going to see a higher prevalence of soft tissue injuries this year. We've already seen it in Blue Jays camp with Julian Merriweather and Chase Anderson both coming down with oblique issues. I mean, we're going to see more of that. We're going to see hamstrings and calves and all kinds of things happening as pitchers ramp up quickly and position players too in an abbreviated spring training for a season that's going to be full go, balls to the wall right out of the gate. So yeah, I think Ty Tice is a guy who could impact this big league bullpen like even early in the season. Also a guy that and this always plays into it, the Blue Jays have to add him to the 40-man roster this year or else expose him to the Rule 5 draft after the season. And considering how hard he throws and how polished he looks on the mound, how confident he is on the mound, I could see a team somewhere taking a chance on him in the Rule 5 draft. So that's also my guy, Dan.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're going to have a lot of starters going 4 or 5 innings at the beginning. And I think we all know we'll see some piggybacking, but there will be certain times where a starter goes 4 and there's no piggyback guy available and you're going to need somebody for an inning or two in relief and quote-unquote low leverage situation. Not that I don't think he can handle higher leverage situations, but they like his arm. The numbers are good. I know from doing the research for the intra-squad games, has held opponents to a .201 batting average over the course of his minor league career. His velocity has ticked up over the last couple of years. They get 30 players, and there's no rule about how many pitchers it'll be. I'm guessing 16. Because I've kind of got in my head 9 starters, 5 bench players. So I've kind of got 14 position players. I think they'll take 16 pitchers. One thing we should remember, though, is assuming Pearson is not on the opening day roster, one of those 16 is on borrowed time, obviously, and it's going to go back down as soon as Pearson comes up. But I think Ty Tice has a chance to, if not break camp with a big club, impact the team at some point during the season.
Dan, you've been very generous with your time. We thank you so much for joining us. I know for a lot of Blue Jays fans, it was actually just kind of comforting to hear you guys on the broadcast again this week. And it did feel like, you know, baseball was really starting up again and life was getting back to something like a new normal again when they heard you on their television. So thanks for that. And thanks for taking the time today.
I appreciate that. It was comforting for me too. And let's hope we're still talking about baseball at the end of September. I hope they can see this thing through.
Our thanks again to Dan Schulman. You hear him on the Blue Jays broadcast. You'll hear him this season, obviously. You can follow him on Twitter at @DSchulman_ESPN. My thanks to Christian Ryan, our producer, doing fine work as always, at Christian Ryan NS on Twitter. Ben's on Twitter at @BNicholsonSmith. He should be back next week. I'm Arden Swelling. Thank you, as always, for listening. Talk to you next week on At the Letters.